Hi everybody, my name is Mr. Barlow and welcome to episode 21 of the VCE Biology Podcast. This episode covers part of Unit 2, Area of Study 2, and it's about the way that energy and matter move within an ecosystem. Now, if you're a living thing, you need to get energy. So if you're a consumer, like a human, what you do to get energy is you just eat another living thing. But if you look at any food chain, at the start of a food chain, there's always a producer. And this shows that all consumers are ultimately dependent on producers for energy. And in fact, most producers, like plants, get their energy from the sun. So they convert light energy from the sun into chemical energy via a process called photosynthesis. And the rate at which producers convert light energy into chemical energy is called primary productivity. Now, some of the energy that the plant produces is actually used up in cellular respiration, you know, within the plant itself. But the rest of that energy forms the plant tissue. And this rate of accumulation of plant tissue is called the net primary productivity. And the actual amount or mass of the plant that accumulates as a result of primary productivity is called the plant's biomass. So you measure primary productivity by measuring the amount of biomass that is produced. So I'll just go into a bit more detail about what biomass actually is. So the biomass of plants is measured as the amount of dry weight that it accumulates in a particular area. For example, the biomass of a grassland is the dry weight of the grass. So dry weight is, you know, without water, but in a grassland, the dry weight of the grass in 1 square meter of land. In other words, if you harvest all of the plants in 1 square meter of the grassland, dry them, and weigh them, then you'll have a measure of the biomass. So it's in fact measured in grams per meters squared. Now, productivity is actually the rate at which biomass accumulates over a period of time. So it's basically telling you how fast plants are growing in a particular ecosystem. And obviously different ecosystems have very different levels of productivity. For example, a tropical rainforest where plants grow really fast and new biomass accumulates really fast, that'll actually have a high level of primary productivity, but deserts will have a very low productivity, and that's because biomass doesn't accumulate very fast in, you know, very dry, lifeless ecosystems like deserts. Now, I've just been speaking about plant biomass. But if we look at the word biomass, bio means living, and mass means the amount of something, then we can see that in fact all living things have a biomass. Now, an ecological pyramid is actually a diagram designed to show the biomass at each trophic level in a given ecosystem. So it starts with the producers at the bottom, and moves up to the herbivores, and then moves up again to the carnivores. So, ecological pyramids also show the way that energy moves along a food chain, and they help to explain why food chains only have at most 4 or 5 trophic levels or feeding levels. For example, let's consider this food chain, which actually starts off real and then becomes imaginary. So at the start of this food chain, I've got grass. And then the next thing in the food chain is a cow, a herbivore. So the cow eats the grass. And let's say that the cow needs to eat about 1 paddock worth of grass in a year to survive. So the thing that eats the cow in this food chain is a human. So let's say that a human needs to eat about 10 cows in a year to survive. So if a human's eating 10 cows, then each cow needs a paddock. So in fact, for one human to survive, you need to have 10 paddocks worth of grass. So already, in fact, you can see that when we increase the number of organisms in a food chain, it increases the amount of producer required to support that food chain. I mean, for example, if we had humans just eating apples, one human could probably survive on 1 paddock's worth of apples in a year. But instead, we've got a cow eating a paddock of grass, and then a human eating 10 cows, which obviously need 10 paddocks. So now we'll keep on going with the food chain. So we've got grass, cows eating the grass, humans eating a cow, and let's say now we've got a lion eating the human. And let's say that a lion needs to eat 100 humans in a year to survive. Well, that means that we would then need to have 100 humans, and each human would need to have 10 cows, and each cow would need to have one paddock. So if you do that maths, you'd actually need to have 1,000 paddocks if you had one lion in that food chain. So let's extend the food chain again. Let's say we had a velociraptor, which is a type of dinosaur, eating lions. And let's say the velociraptor needs to eat 100 lions a year to survive. So you've got one velociraptor eating 100 lions, and each lion is eating 100 humans, and each human is eating 10 cows, and each cow is living on one paddock of grass in a year. So if with this maths, for one velociraptor, you'd actually need to have 100,000 paddocks worth of grass to have that single velociraptor to survive. But let's extend the food chain one more time and say that a Tyrannosaurus rex eats the velociraptor. And again, we'll say that a T-Rex needs to eat 100 velociraptors in a year to survive. So if we've got one single T-Rex, and it eats 100 velociraptors, and each single velociraptor eats 100 lions, and each single lion eats 100 humans, and each single human eats 10 cows, and each single cow needs to have one paddock of grass to survive on for a year, all of that would mean that to have one single Tyrannosaurus rex surviving for a year, you'd need to have 10 million paddocks of grass for one single T-Rex. So you can see that when we increase a food chain up to, what's that? That's only six trophic levels. We need to have way too much producer. So in that example, grass, for the food chain to be sustainable. And that's why food chains are only ever really at most four or five trophic levels long. Now, also interestingly, natural food chains can actually only support a human population of about 10 million people. And by natural food chain, I actually mean, if tribes of humans went out into the forest and just ate berries and killed the odd animal and ate it and kept roaming around the forest like hunters and gatherers, like we used to, that would be surviving on natural food chains. But humans don't do that anymore. So we've developed farming and agriculture. And because of these methods, we've increased the primary productivity of the land heaps. So that's in fact enabled the human population to increase to, way more than 10 million. It's now, in fact, just over 7 billion people. So that's quite interesting and possibly bad for the planet. But anyway. Now, we've seen that there's a decline in energy along each step of a food chain, which explains why food chains are normally pretty short. But matter also moves through food chains. And a good example of moving matter through food chains is the movement of toxins or poisons, as they can actually accumulate up a food chain. And this is called bioaccumulation. So, an example of that is if you've got a little fish and it's swimming in a river which has had some sort of human pollution or toxin in it, and that one little fish eats one bit of the pollution or the toxin, then a slightly bigger fish eats, let's say, 100 of those little fish, then the slightly bigger fish will have 100 bits of that toxin in it if it's unable to, get rid of it. And that's, let's say, a bigger fish eats that medium-sized fish, then that bigger fish will have 100 times 100, 10,000 bits of the toxin in it. And then if a bigger fish eats the quite large fish, it's 100 of them, it'll have a million bits of the toxin in it. And then if a human eats the big fish, then we're just bang eating a million bits of this poisonous stuff. And that's really bad. So that's called bioaccumulation. And it happens when some sort of non-biodegradable toxin stays in the food chain and builds up, in each animal up a food chain. So plants get their energy from the sun, and then other organisms eat plants to get their energy. And then those organisms use that energy to heat themselves up and, survive. And then that heat energy is lost from the organism and it goes into the atmosphere and dissipates into space and it's lost. Fortunately, energy is constantly replaced by the sun. Nutrients and matter, like elements, however, are not constantly replaced. And as such, they actually need to be constantly recycled. So there are these things called biogeochemical cycles. And biogeochemical cycles refer to the movement of a chemical element within an ecosystem. And there are a couple of good examples of biogeochemical cycles. There's the carbon cycle, the nitrogen cycle, and the phosphorus cycle. So to go into a bit of detail about the carbon cycle, basically the carbon cycle involves plants taking in carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And then they convert that carbon dioxide into food or into glucose via photosynthesis. And then animals eat the plants, eat that as food, and so they take in that carbon. And then aerobic or cellular respiration takes place, and that breaks down, that organic carbon. And then they release that carbon back into the atmosphere as carbon dioxide in their breath. Carbon's also cycled around the globe because animals and plants die, and when that happens, they get buried and they decompose. Another way that carbon is cycled around the world is that when living things die and they get buried deep underground, they eventually, over well millennia, turn into fossil fuels, and then humans can dig up those fossil fuels, so oil, gas, or coal. And when humans burn those fossil fuels, that again releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So you can see that carbon, cycles constantly around the globe. It's taken in as carbon dioxide into plants, turned into organic carbon, put back into the atmosphere via animal and plant respiration, goes into the ground and forms fossil fuels, goes back into the atmosphere from fossil fuels in, car and factory emissions. So right about there, the issue currently, since in fact the Industrial Revolution, is that the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has actually increased. So the carbon cycle is a little bit out of whack, I suppose, because we're burning so much fossil fuels at the moment. So yeah, the carbon cycle is a bit upset, and the increase in the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has actually increased the greenhouse effect, which is of course contributing to global warming. So there you go. Now, another biogeochemical cycle is the nitrogen cycle. So nitrogen's really, really important for living things in terms of, the formation of proteins. And in fact, 80% of air is nitrogen. But humans and plants can't just get or use the nitrogen in the air. So there's actually these really, really important nitrogen-fixing bacteria, and they convert the nitrogen in the atmosphere into a form that plants can use via processes called ammonification and nitrification. So then the plants can absorb that nitrogen, and then obviously animals eat plants, and then they get the nitrogen to make their proteins, and then the plants and animals die, fall to the ground, and then different bacteria break down those plants and animals and release the nitrogen as nitrogen gas back into the atmosphere via a process called denitrification. So that's, a summary of the nitrogen cycle. Another biogeochemical cycle is the phosphorus cycle. The phosphorus cycle actually takes a really long time to complete, way longer than the nitrogen cycle or the carbon cycle, basically because it involves rocks. So phosphorus is, initially released into soil and water by the weathering of rock, and then phosphate is taken up by plants, and then it goes through food chain. So animals eat the plants, and then those living things, plants and animals, die, and the phosphate in the living things is eventually it's broken down. But then the phosphates are eventually goes into groundwater and eventually ends up in the ocean, And all the phosphorus in the ocean eventually then sediments to the very bottom of the ocean. And then over a fairly long period of time, sedimentary rock is formed at the bottom of the ocean. And then after, another long period of time, that sedimentary rock is pushed up back to the surface of the earth, where it is undergoes weathering again. And then once more, that phosphate is or phosphorus is released into the ground, where it can be reabsorbed again by plants. So that's the phosphorus cycle, and yeah, because it involves the formation of rocks, it takes quite a long time to cycle around. Now, the last cycle I'll talk about is the water cycle. So that's another example of matter, being constantly recycled around the globe. And obviously, water is really important for life. If there was no water on Earth, life probably wouldn't exist. But I reckon the water cycle can be pretty much drummed down to this: evaporation, rain. That's pretty much it. So, water's in the ocean, it's in rivers, it's in lakes, it's in living things, and then, it evaporates into the atmosphere, and then in the atmosphere it forms clouds, and then, it rains, or it snows back down. So, yeah, evaporation and rain. That's the water cycle. And that brings episode 21 of the VCE Biology Podcast to a close. I'm Mr. Barlow, and thank you for listening.